Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast hangout. This is episode 46. And since Google Hangouts is having the bug of the month of not showing the lower third, let me introduce myself. I'm Manuel Lemos, the creator and developer of the PHP classes and JS classes site. And today I have here with me another anonymous person from the Eastern Europe. Hello, Arthurs. Now you have to introduce yourself because Google Hangouts does not want you to be famous.
I don't know, actually. I think I can enable that feature, so it must be something on your side. Let me try, just to prove you're wrong.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, because in last month you also were not able to enable. Yeah, but I would love to be proven wrong. Maybe that means that you have a different version of something.
Oh, yeah, that's possible. I don't know. So, is it on?
No. No, it's no. On now.
Yeah, so
I don't know what is the difference. Maybe you are just using Windows or something.
Yeah, probably.
I think it's something.
Probably something.
Yeah. But, okay, so we are here today to talk about the latest interesting things that have been happening in the JavaScript world. And as always, I'm going to start with several topics that we have ready here to comment. I'm going to share the screen here. Okay, let me see. I'm trying to share the screen, but let's see if this works. Share.
It works.
It works. It's that it was. I was having a hard time to switching the Windows here. Anyway, I'm going to comment about this article. Interesting. That was published in SitePoint site regarding. Three new JavaScript APIs that I have not heard before, that probably were specified recently. And there is one for web alarms, another for presentation API, and then there's another for standby API. And this is interesting because these APIs seem to be geared more towards applications that eventually will be running on mobile devices, because I think at least some of them do not make much sense on desktops or notebooks.
Yeah, but let's look at them. So, for example, Web Alarms API would allow you to receive an event when specific when you get at a specific time. For example, you can now schedule notifications. It's like local notifications on the mobile phones, basically. You can say, well, 2 hours from now or exactly at that time, please notify me or something. Yeah, so, yeah.
It's like a cron. Well, I don't know. Would this integrate with some any alarm applications that you have on your mobile device? Because I'm not sure if you can, for instance, having multiple alarm applications installed and which one is with it used.
You
is
can.
There something standard?
No, I think you can because they all register to for system time, so they can present maybe in a different ways the alarm. So you can have multiple alarm apps on your phone, so why not here?
Yeah, I mean multiple different sets of alarms. I mean each application would manage their own alarms, not necessarily the same. I don't know if maybe, I'm just not sure if this would be the case, but probably there is a one central set of alarms that different applications can manage. But if this is something that they were able to implement as a standard, maybe there is a common set of alarms that you can actually program, and in this case you would be able to program it from JavaScript. So the next one, presentation API, this seems to be to control where your current screen is going.
Yeah, it's something similar like that. Basically what it does, it you show a web page on your device or desktop, and there you show a web page on your the projector, and it allows to communicate between those pages, so you can like manipulate from one page, manipulate the other, or something like that.
Yeah, this could be interesting for applications, but
like creating a PowerPoint and a notes, so you can see notes while presenting.
You can send it to your Chromecast device.
Yeah.
I have a Chromecast, and it's cool for watching videos, and you can control it from different devices. Well, the Android version is not working very well because it doesn't let you control the size of the subtitles, which is important when you are when you prefer to watch a movie with subtitles. But anyway, I think this API would also be able to control at least part of the functionality, probably not subtitles or things like that that are probably very specific to the
to the
screen device that you are using. And then there's the standby API that that seems to be
able to won't lock your screen while it's idle. You don't do anything, but it still won't allow the application to lock your screen, like keeping it awake.
But is this for screen savers or for when you put your device in suspend?
Yeah, that's really a good question. How it's written, it seems it's to be for phone devices to lock screens. But maybe, this prevents device from entering power saving state, turning off the screen. So I assume it could work on Windows too, but I really don't know if it would, because it's managed somewhat differently, and unless it exposed some operating system functions.
Yeah, it was. I think in this case it is probably to integrate with those events when you push your mobile device power button, that it does not shut down your device, but it just suspends the activities. But once you once there is some input activity, becomes it gets back to the it starts working again as usual. Your applications will resume where they were before. It's not like those that when you suspend your computer and shut it down.
Yeah.
It still needs power to work on. Yeah. Well, anyway, these are interesting APIs that they seem to be targeted to allow web applications to integrate better with the functionality of mobile devices. I suppose these are not yet available.
I think they're mostly drafts, probably, on how it could be.
There are even an unofficial drafts. But it's always interesting to know about these APIs. So if you would like to take advantage of them, you may be able to already to take a look and start testing them, probably in the latest versions of browsers that implement them. Okay, moving on with the next topic. Now we're going to comment about something that is just curiosity, probably not going much in depth about this, which is the latest version of the V8 engine that is used by Chrome and also Node.js. Basically, they call it V8 Turbofan. And personally, I don't have much more to comment than this, because this is really, really, really low level. They say that it provides performance improvements, but I would not go much farther from that, because this is really low level, and I would not have enough knowledge about this to comment. I don't know if you want to comment anything, Arthur.
Yeah, the only thing I would want to say that V8 was a great breakthrough in speed, so if it said that it could make it even faster, more performant, then maybe web is really is going to be a cross-platform environment, new media.
Right, and that there's really not much more to say, because we always appreciate the fact that it is going to get faster, but in reality, most of us do not really care how.
Exactly.
Okay, so moving on to the next topic, on which we are going to comment about the state of web components. For those that are not familiar about what this is, web components are basically a way to implement custom components, I mean custom tags in your web pages that probably make the HTML more readable. You replace some tags, some complicated tags, with simpler ones, and then you can define the behavior of those tags using some JavaScript code. And there is this article here asking whether the web components are ready for using in production sites. Basically, what they comment is that this is all fine, but if you rely on this, it may not always work well in all browsers, but they mentioned that there is one big site they know that is already using it. In this case, they mentioned GitHub, which is using a time custom web component that they are using to show certain information. But this is really, really not very important, because the way it works, if web components are not enabled, it will still work fine, and probably will not notice any great difference. Well, this is just to say that you can implement your custom tags.
HTML tags, yeah.
But probably not really for something crucial that may not work in all browsers. I don't know.
Especially if you have old versions to support it, then yeah, not a good idea. It's a nice and a cool trick to provide an interface. If you used to create a special div element and then put a lot of JavaScript in your own load function to modify the div, then now it's as easy as simply creating the tag and let the JavaScript take care about everything and provide some values through attributes. So it's an easier, nicer, and cleaner interface, but yeah, probably not ready for exactly production, especially if you need backwards compatibilities. And as we discussed somewhere in previous podcasts, it uses DOM mutations, and yeah, as we discussed it earlier, the support was only in the latest browser versions.
Yeah, well, maybe in 3 years we'll decide that it's okay to use this. Well, anyway, at least we know that GitHub is using on the but not really for something critical, or else they probably would not really use it in this way. Okay, so moving on to the next topic, we are going to comment about something interesting, which is, in this case, it's a jQuery plugin, although I think this really did not need to be a jQuery plugin. But the purpose is this is to try to anticipate, to predict what is the element that the user is going to hover or click. So basically, it's probably to make the user interface more responsive. I mean, not responsive in the size, in the sense of adapting to different screens, but make it more usable by anticipating what actions the user is going to perform, and probably load things faster even before the user needs them. So basically, that's what I could gather from this class. I'm not sure how it works internally, I mean this plugin, it seems to try to analyze the event that usually happened right before a certain over or click event. I don't know, Arthur, did you look into this?
Actually, I did not. I would imagine it work a little bit pronto, but let me check now. Yeah, but the idea is really interesting for an idea. But for usability, this plugin can be as a good addition to UI, but also it in some situations can make users really frustrated. So I would probably not recommend using something like that. Like the user would be like, "Ah, I wanted to click this, but it opened that. So why? What just happened?"
Yeah. It always depends on what you do with the anticipation function. For instance, let me share this again. Here, I'm not sure if this is large enough. Here, you can define an anticipation function, and I'm not sure what are these parameters, P and V, but okay. It registers anticipation function. You probably do something useful here. Like, for instance, maybe you need some library that needs to be loaded. Maybe you can load that library on demand, but right before the user is going to need it. So I think I understand your point. I just think it depends what you do. I don't know what kind of scenarios you were seeing that could be bad for the user.
Well, imagine if you have links to social accounts. They are usually quite together in the website. So you want to like click on Twitter, but you hovered over the Facebook and it opened the Facebook, and you are like, "What's happening? Why did it do that?"
Yeah.
So you would need to be really careful on what options you really add. That should not be the actions that would like actually make something. Open a dropdown is completely okay, probably like an example.
Yeah, I think you should not guess too much. Probably making wrong guesses is not going to help you. Okay, now moving on to the next topic, on which we comment another interesting library. In this case, is for Node.js. It is able to extract content from web pages, but this one seems to not be the usual scrape HTML, and that's it. It seems to be able to actually determine what is the relevant content on a page, like, for instance, ditching headers and footers and sidebars. And, well, at least that's what I got the way this works, because scraping content from HTML, it's not the hard part. Arthur, did you look into this, or did you think?
Yeah, at first I thought that maybe it uses semantic analysis, like you can look at the HTML code and like see what, especially on HTML5, see that if it's a menu, if it's a navigation, if it's a site, something, if it's a footer, and like take only the sections, main content. But after looking a bit at code, it also has some stop words list, so it really does the text analysis, and it's probably searching for larger chunks of text of paragraphs and then try to analyze it. And so it's not just simply checking HTML, it's much more intelligent that, and that's why it seems to be providing really great results.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought this would be for. I hope I'm not mistaken. And if that's it, I think it can be useful because, well, I don't know. It depends. It's not that I have many purposes for scraping applications, but I know many sites do that. They probably do not have an API to access.
I could create JS class copy.org and scrape of web contents of JS classes or something like that.
That would not be a good idea. Well, but I can see the purpose of people that want to scrape content to obtain things that otherwise could be obtained via an API. But when that API is not available, this could be useful. In this case, it actually makes the job simpler. Yeah, as it would avoid the need to have a post-processing task of scraping the relevant content.
It's okay. Really useful for all machine learning applications because you need really a lot of data and then you need to process it. And so that is the case where it would be really useful.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, now moving on to another topic on which we're going to comment about DOM comparator, which is basically a library that compares two HTML strings and returns the difference between those strings. It's just not a difference between two texts, but I think it is smarter than that because you can see what are the differences. And here is an example. They have an input HTML here, and then the other input to be compared is here. Then you call this component, and it seems to return an object like this. In this example, they are passing it to a testing framework expect that tests if a value is equal to this one. And from what it seems, it does not return the difference between two HTML strings is not really something that is also HTML. It's rather an object that lists the changes. In this case, it says it removed the attribute, and then it mentions a path where of that attribute. And well, this is quite advanced. I'm not sure when this would be useful.
I know. Pick me.
Yeah. Okay. You may answer that question.
Okay. Basically, while working with lots of different designers remotely, of course, there is usually okay. It's okay to work with some. We have revisions and like that. But one was typical a pixel. Vision designer, basically he would need to make everything in places by pixels, and so I created a small JavaScript injecting script. So he injected into URL that would allow him to modify it, and he will just tell me, well, I modified the padding of it to pixels more, so it works okay. So I modified the CSS code, but this library would actually allow me to take the normal source code and then take the source code after his modification with injected JavaScript and just send me the summary of what modifications he did so I can apply them in the real CSS file and deploy.
Yeah, that's true. That could be useful. I just am not sure if this would actually work also at the CSS level because if your designer changed things in CSS but not in the HTML itself, you probably the change that you want to detect would go unnoticed. I'm not sure.
Well, true, but if you're working with the injected JavaScript, then it's probably applying it so as style attributes, so it should reflect in the DOM. Okay, yeah, it's debatable. It's something that needs to be experimented with.
Well, it says the DOM, but in reality, you pass two strings.
Yeah, that's why it would be perfect
for it. I think it is just called DOM comparator because it probably builds a small DOM tree to compare things. Okay, well, anybody that has a good purpose for this tool, I'm sure there is plenty of people who needs like that. We can take a look at this component. So we are going to move on to the next topic, which is about a library that claims to work faster for loading single page applications. Usually those applications have a part of HTML and JavaScript. Often the JavaScript is detached from the HTML page, and then there are some parameters, some data that is used to load the initial state. Well, that's the way I interpret this. So what this library proposes is that instead of loading the JavaScript and starting the application and then only then loading the necessary data, JSON data, for instance, to configure what is the initial state, they suggest that it could be done in parallel loading the page application JavaScript and the data JavaScript. I'm not sure what exactly this library does because it's very, very small. And probably just switch some the order of loading the things. I did not take a look, so I'm not sure.
It seems to be that, well, the main idea is that when you're loading the page, when the browser hits JavaScript, it mandatory needs to finish loading the JavaScript and only then continues to load everything else because, well, the DOM can be modified. So that's why they usually recommend to put all the JavaScript in the end of the page because the page would be already loaded. But this library seems to do the trick that you actually load the contents of the page through the JavaScript. So you guarantee it would be loaded one of the first even before the other HTML goes. So it's a way to present the information faster. I don't know how well it works in reality, but I think that's the main idea behind this library.
Yeah. Well, this can be interesting for all those that are trying to optimize the last mile to make it as fast as possible, make your web pages as fast as possible. So those that are interested should take a look at this Pegasus library and eventually take advantage of whatever it proposes to make it faster. Now we are going to move on to one topic that we usually make a bit fun of the topic, not specifically because of this library, but because everything else has been ported from C++ to JavaScript using Emscripten.
You're saying why that's
this time it's not Emscripten, it's Chirp. It's a new library, I mean a new C++ compiler that generates JavaScript as output, so you can implement convert existing C++ libraries to JavaScript, and it's basically for the same purpose of Emscripten. So I'm not sure if there is much more to mention than this. I don't know, any comments, Arthur?
Yeah, well, when you look at Emscripten, there is a list of all the dependencies and all the things that you need to do to make it all happen. At least for it's my first look on this website I haven't heard about before, so at least from this look it seems like you download it, you provide the sources, it does everything that you need yourself, so I would really need to check it out, but it seems
I could not figure the difference if there is anything different. Probably. Maybe those that are really interested, because I think it's not for everybody. It's not just like everybody has some C++ code to convert to JavaScript.
Yeah, it's probably OpenGL to WebGL, similar stuff that they expect.
All those CPU-intensive applications, for instance, games that were done in the past. So given that, we are going to move on to another topic. Now we're getting close to the end of list of topics that we comment. And this one is a library to detect if a function is native code with JavaScript. Native code, it means that a certain JavaScript function is implemented natively by the browser, for instance, that provides the function, its functionality to using native code of the browser. It's probably not even JavaScript, something C++, exactly. And this library allows you to detect if a certain function is native code. The basic test could be to check out this the output. When you try to convert the function to string, it would probably output something like native code. But I'm not even sure if this would work equally well in all browsers.
Yeah, well, usually when There is another documentation about something I like to do a loop of the object and alert out all the keys and the values of the key. And yeah, pretty time most of the time I see, oh, okay, there is a function this name and it's a native code, so something like that. So it seems to be yes that most browsers just return the message that is native code and that doesn't show the code. So it could work like that maybe.
Yeah, so but anyway, did you figure out how they implement this? Is this the code to test if it's native code or not?
Yeah, it's a better solution. Basically, yeah, what they made it more cross browser probably, because if you see the comments, there are some like hacks and constructors like for Safari or larger than 4 and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and they even export it as a module, so you could probably use it in maybe Node.js. Right.
Well, anyway, I think the bigger question is when would it be useful to detect if a function is native or not? Because it doesn't seem to be a problem that every JavaScript developer has to solve every day.
Yeah, my use case. That I could suggest could be too far-fetched for really ambitious JavaScript developers, but it would go like, I check if this function is native. If yes, well, let's use it, because, well, you won't get anything faster than native. But if it's not, then maybe some other library writes it, but I know I can do it better, so better use my function than the other libraries. Something like that, maybe.
Right, it's really far-fetched.
But most probably, yeah, it's something like feature testing for some purpose.
Yeah, maybe there is some weird use case that we are not looking into this, but could be just what you said. Anyway.
There is one mention not to use it as a sense of a form of security. So, like, you could see if... the function that could wants to run is like the browser or something, maybe that could be injected or something like that. But I don't know, that's a bit also a use case potential.
Right. So they say that is even less useful than you could. Okay. Yeah. Well, with this, we covered many topics. So we are now going to one final regular section on which we comment. The Innovation Award winners, in this case of June. In June, the activity was sort of low. Everybody was paying attention to World Cup soccer, so only two classes were sent.
Football.
Yes, okay. Football, soccer. It depends
on perspective.
Who prefers? Maybe there are some Americans that are listening and they say, oh, football, that thing that we play with the hands. Oh, that's right. So I said soccer to make it obvious that you play with your socks. Or not.
Or not.
With some boots, of course. On top of your socks.
So I could call it booter.
Yes, that's probably the more accurate name. But here we are talking about JavaScript, so that is a totally side topic. Artus, which of these two components would you like to comment this month?
I'm already trying to share my screen, but it seems a part of the my title working, my screen sharing is not. Let me try it one more time. Oh, yeah, now it opens something. Yep, it works. So the one I would want to comment is a class by Daniel Cruciani from Italy, and he implemented show context sensitive menu. I don't know if it can be counted as something really special or not, but I really like his approach, easy approach. Let me show you the code a little. So basically, yeah, you have some functions, and then you just name the options and pass these functions to the plugin. And what it does, it creates the context menu with the options that you provided and the specific function between them. So the interface is pretty simple and easy to use. Of course, as he mentioned on his blog, there are some things need to be worked out and may not work in all browsers. But yeah, it's a great idea, a great asset. That's why I really liked it. Yes, and Daniel Cruciani received a book of O'Reilly for it. So yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And let me switch to the other screen here. Okay, this is. I'm not sure if this is looking well because I zoomed it.
Oh, you mean it's not responsive?
No, I mean zoomed it different in a different place. Okay.
Oh, I see. Is you? No. Okay. Now you're out.
Okay. So the other object I want to comment. This one was sent by Jason Gerfen from the United States, and it's called com.js. It's a component that seems to do something that seems common, which is to send AJAX requests, WebSockets requests, but it provides a unified solution that also works not only with the WebSockets and the AJAX, but also with XDR. XDR is X domain requests. It seems this is something for Internet Explorer or something, because I have never heard of XDR before until I saw this component.
Yeah. All I know is XHR, right?
Yes, but it's different. It's X domain requests. I suppose this is for sending cross-domain requests, because AJAX requests do not work if you do not have across domains, unless you are using, I think, AJAX 2 that with some permissions to enable that from the sender domain, I mean a receiving domain of the AJAX requests. Or it's either that, or I'm switching the order of the words. Anyway, this is a somewhat unusual, so congratulations to Jason for this contribution. And for that, he picked a prize, which is a book from of choice that he picked from Pact. Pact is a also a book publisher like O'Reilly. They have many books that are specific to many topics that are not general topics, I would say. As for the Innovation Award ranking of June so far, and also considering the winners of July that were already announced, the positions have not changed so much by author, because only two authors that were not yet very well ranked were scored some points. So the main leaders of the ranking by author remain practically the same as so far. Andrés Jordan Marmolejo from Spain leads with 2 packages and 10 points. Jimmy Bow from Canada follows with 3 packages and 7 points, and then several other authors with 1 or 2 packages and less points. By country, we can see that Spain is leading now, actually sort of increased its lead, that thanks to points by Tony L. Requena from Spain in the July already, and Spain so far has 3 packages and 12 points, followed by Italy with 3 packages and 8 points, then Canada also with 3 packages and 7 points. Then we see Sweden as is already increased its ranking with 2 packages with 5 points, and then several other countries follow with 1 package and less points. So with this, we practically ended this hangout. I'd like to thank you, Arthur, for coming. I don't know if you had any final remarks, anything that you wanted to mention.
There are some interesting developments here, so it's quite possible I'll be back in JavaScript world pretty soon working on a new project. Yeah, we could probably discuss it more on the next podcast. I could tell about it more.
It's true that at least both in JS classes and PHP classes, there have been lots of good contributions, not only in quality. I'm talking about the nominees of the Innovation Award, but also in quantity. I have a long queue of packages to approve, and as you may understand, packages have to be reviewed just to understand what they do, so I can elaborate a clear description, and that takes time. That's why I cannot approve them all at once. So I hope those authors that have packages in the queues, please be patient. They will be approved as soon as possible. And so keep sending your packages. The sooner, the better. So the sooner you send them, the faster I can approve them, because they are entering in the queue. And well, with this, we end this recording. That is all for now. Bye.
Bye.